On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Never has the phrase "the buck stops here" had so much relevance. Thanks to the boundary pushers that is technology, the days of cash may soon be no more. The future is called electronic money, and soon millions of people will be paying for their purchases, not with dollars and cents, but keychains and mobile phones. This hour, On Point, examining the pleasures and the pitfalls of electronic cash. Joining me now from New York is Joanne Ramos. She's global banking correspondent at The Economist magazine and the author of this week's cover story, The End of the Cash Era. Joanne, nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
Electronic cash, what is it?
Well, basically, if you think about what money is even today, it's really data. It's really information. The actual coins that we use or the paper that we use doesn't have intrinsic value. That piece of paper doesn't have value. When copper prices shot up recently, the penny was actually worth more than a penny that you were holding in your hand. So what's happening now with the with better technology and cheaper technology is that this data is moving to an electronic and digital form rather than paper and coin form.
So my
that means that you can
that means you can
use a phone, or you can use your credit card, or you can use a contactless card. You can use any kind of format that can capture this digital data.
Right. So how exactly does that work then? If my credit card is my mobile phone, Wave and Pay, how does that work?
Well, in the mobile phone technology, there's basically a chip that's planted into the cell phone that a reader at the checkout point can read when you wave it over it. And it transmits all of your data, the transaction data and your kind of credit card data, to that reader.
And then how and where is the money debited?
Depends if you can. At this point, they're working on doing it with both credit and debit. So if it's a debit, it would work just like your debit card. It would debit it from your bank account. If it's a credit card, it would debit it through Visa or MasterCard, and you'd have to pay it within a month, just like you do today.
And how easy is an account like this to set up? Anyone can do it?
Well, at this point, there are still a lot of pilot projects, but we're not yet there today in any major way in America. I think right now the estimates that are out there say that there's about $4 billion or so dollars in mobile phone payments that are made today, and they expect that to jump to around $37 billion next year. That's still, of course, a drop in the bucket compared to how much money is spent by people worldwide.
This is the newest trend in Japan. How's it working there?
Well, there the pickup has been a lot bigger, and it's some of it is on mobile phones, but a lot of it's on what's called contactless cards. And again, that's still like your debit or credit card, but rather than having to swipe it or punch in a PIN number, you just sweep it over a reader at the checkout counter, and it's much faster.
We were talking about these contactless payments, these contactless cards this morning. It sounds so clunky and sort of cold and distancing. What are they hoping to portray by marketing it this way?
It's really convenience. The card companies and banks are trying to say is, you know, rather than fumbling for cash when you have to get your cup of coffee in the morning or pick up your newspaper, you can just swipe your card and you're out within, you know, a tenth of a second.
So if you think a spending spree is easy with a credit card, imagine a Wave and Pay sort of system with your phone or one of these cards that you're mentioning, or even a keychain, perhaps. Do people tend to spend more, has it been shown, with digital cash?
Yes, it has. There are studies that show that people just generally on credit or debit card will spend a fifth more than they do using cash. It just doesn't seem as real. So people tend to load up a bit more.
There are issues.
And that's actually, of course, why credit card companies are happy about it, and banks and retailers themselves. Mm. I mean, behind this whole push, there's a consumer demand for it to some degree, but there is a big industry that benefits from it, and it's very much in their interest, too, to see the world move this way.
What are the downsides to this, Joanne? What about questions of privacy, first off?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think when people talk about the cashless society, it's still a bit futuristic. I think that in, who knows when, 10, 15, 20 years, the technology will get there, and it's already getting close today. But a matter of the society ever going completely cashless would be for the reasons you mentioned, for security, for privacy, and then also for fees. On the privacy front, With this kind of cashless society, an electronic society, your transactions can always be traced. Now, you can build structures where you kind of block this off from marketers or even maybe the government. But it'd be hard for me to imagine that the government would ever not let themselves peek into the transactions if, say, they suspected that a terrorist had a mobile phone and was making payments all over America.
And what about those credit card fees that you mentioned, which add up to millions and millions of dollars every year? Are banks and credit card companies on board with this? Are they ready to give those up?
Well, they won't necessarily. In fact, they probably, depending on how this all shakes out, no one really knows, they could stand to make a lot more money out of it. For instance, if you're using a contactless card that today, you're still doing it through Visa or MasterCard or Amex. So they're still getting a cut of that. From their point of view, it's just like you're using a normal credit card or debit card. It's just that from your point of view, you don't have to spend the time, you know, signing your name or punching in the numbers. And the way that they're trying to make money off of this is really use these contactless cards to capture smaller payments. So the newspaper that you normally, you know, fish out a dollar bill for, now you can just swipe your card. And whereas with your dollar bill, you know, credit card companies wouldn't make money. They will if you use the electronic version.
What about phone companies themselves? Would they want to assume any sort of financial risk, or would they essentially start functioning as banks, you know, collecting payments, dealing with customer default, all the rest of that?
You know, that's the big question out there, and people really don't know that. I mean, some experts think that cell phone companies won't want to go there because they will start to have to function more as banks, and obviously there's a lot of risk that comes with acting as a bank. You have to, if you extend credit as a cell phone company, you're on the line for that credit. So I think it really is a question if mobile companies want to expand kind of out of their expertise to do that.
What about, Joanne, those who may not be on the front lines of receiving this sort of technology, immigrants or welfare recipients, for example? Does it have the potential to change their financial circumstance, if you will?
It does. And I think that that's one of the more exciting parts of this trend. Right now, if you're an unbanked customer, say in America, you're a new immigrant or you're a young person with no credit history who for some reason didn't get a bank account and can't get a credit card. When you get paid, you get a check and you have to bring it to a check casher and you get charged quite high amounts of money for that. If your check is stolen, it's gone. With what's happening now is that governments let's just take governments. They are issuing prepaid cards or stored valued cards so that they will give you your welfare check directly onto what looks like a debit card. And you can use it as a debit card. You can use it at the Gap. You can use it at an ATM machine. You can use it to get your cup of coffee. So that avoids having to go to these expensive check cashers to access that money. And it also means that if that card's stolen, the money still exists. You just have to be issued another card. Mm.
Joanne, you have the technology. How do you like it?
Yes, I was talking about this with someone earlier today. I'm a customer of Citibank, and they sent me one of these contactless keychains. It must have been 6 months ago or even longer. And I have to say that I chucked it. But I'm a little bit of a Luddite. I was worried about the security issue. I thought that if someone stole that or if I lost it, which I tend to do with my keychains, someone could just run around, you know, charging a lot of $25 and under transactions to my name. So I'm not really on the cutting edge of technology, so maybe I'm not the right person to ask, but it didn't really appeal to me.
What about the security issue? How do you deactivate the phone? Is it difficult? Can you do it remotely?
Yeah, exactly. This is much more advanced in Japan, but in Japan, if you have a mobile phone that you're using for payments and you lose it, you can just call into a number and turn it off. And that means that anyone who picks it up can't make payments off it, can't access your credit card information. So
if I understand this correctly, are you scared to use this technology? Does it somewhat intimidate you?
I think I'm just old school in that way, in the sense that I don't mind carrying cash. I probably still feel the stigma to some degree of especially credit, so I tend to use my debit card more or pay cash. But I'll tell you, when you look at especially the younger and teenage generation, they don't use cash. I mean, Visa has some great statistics that show that if you're from 18 to 34, you're four times more likely to carry your cell phone than you are to cash. If you're any age, you're still twice as likely to carry your cell phone as cash. So that kind of points to where and the world is moving. If people, especially the younger generation, is more likely to carry a cell phone than cash, and cell phones can be used to pay for things. Why would you need cash?
What about this announcement this week that mobile phone users can now send money through their phones to other cell phone users in other countries?
Exactly. This is a MasterCard program that they're doing with the biggest mobile carrier in India, and it's actually very exciting. Their remittances are a huge, huge, huge source of, income for people in the developing world. If you think of how many Mexican immigrants we have here sending money home to Mexico or Indian immigrants sending home to India. And one of the difficulties there is sometimes when the American immigrant is sending money home, that person at home doesn't have a bank account or an easy way to get that money. So they tend to go to kind of remittance services that charge a lot of money. What this MasterCard program is trying to do is say, I, sitting here in New York City, I'm an immigrant from the Philippines. I actually am from the Philippines. And I'm going to send money to my parents back home, even if they're out in the sticks in the middle of nowhere, on my cell phone. And as long as they have a cell phone there, which they do, I mean, the penetration of cell phones in the Philippines is huge, they can get that money and access it. And then use that phone to pay for things.
What extraordinary, what an impact this might have worldwide then.
Exactly. I think this is really where it's revolutionary. It can bring millions and millions of unbanked populations, especially in faraway rural areas where the banking system just hasn't penetrated, into the system.
We're talking with Joanne Ramos. She's global banking correspondent at The Economist magazine and author of the cover story, The End of the Cash Era. I also want to bring in now from Atlanta, Mark Collins. He is vice president for long-term products at Singular Wireless. Mark Collins, nice to have you with us.
Thank you for having me today.
Wave and pay using cell phones like credit cards to pay for most things in our lives. How do you see this as the future?
Certainly is an opportunity for our customers to get more value from the services they purchase from us, and we are looking at it very closely as a new opportunity for a new line of business.
What should people expect as far as a timetable for this sort of to be widespread throughout the United States?
Well, there's going to be a transition period, and the first thing that we have to do here in the U.S. is to get our customers feeling comfortable, as they do with their PCs today, about going online wirelessly and manipulating their existing financial services accounts. As an example, if you're a customer of a retail bank, it's pretty likely that your retail bank is offering you the ability to go online, move funds around, pay bills, check balances, and things of that nature. So the first thing we plan to do and are in the process of doing is allowing our customers access to those existing financial institutions via their wireless devices.
What are the obstacles, Mark, to getting this contactless payment up and running?
Well, there's several things that have to happen. First of all, there has to be a device at the end of the point of sale that can actually take a contactless payment. So, for example, when you're in the grocery store and you pay for your groceries with a credit card or a debit card, there's a device there that you scan through today. Those have to be updated to be contactless. Now, there are some franchises that have already done that. You can go into McDonald's today. You can go into CVS. They're locally in the Boston area, and they do have contactless readers. But they are the minority at this point in time. There's an estimate of somewhere around 40,000 of those in the United States versus multiple millions of places where you can actually make a credit card or a debit card payment.
Why are cell phones a good vehicle for this technology then? And could the technology be lodged in a key ring, for example, or numerous other places as well?
Well, from our perspective, obviously, it's something that we feel strongly about. The cell phone, the car keys, and the wallet or the purse are pretty much the three things you don't leave home without these days. In terms of security and safety, however, we feel like we can offer that kind of service experience along with financial institutions that we partner with to bring that level of security and safety for online as well as point-of-sale transactions for our customers.
How are you answering questions about security? What happens if you lose your cell phone?
Well, our partner, we partner with a company called Firethorn Holdings. Firethorn has experience in the online banking, or its current leadership has experience in the online banking business that started up in the late 1990s and early 2000s. And they're very familiar with all of the rules that the FDIC has in terms of security and safety two-factor authentication being one example of that, as well as building the device, building the client that's resident on the wireless device, such that once a customer reports it lost or stolen, we can go in and the customer can go in, work with their financial institution, click a couple of boxes on the company's website, and we can disable it immediately.
You're doing a test run of this contactless payment system in New York City. Can you tell me about it? How's it working out?
Well, it's, the results are just now starting to come in. We started it in late January. We're working with MasterCard as well as Citigroup to test paying for services to get onto the commuter trains in the city using wireless devices. It's more of a technology trial at this point. We're trying to understand how the devices are impacted. What are the issues with weathering? As you know, you guys are having a pretty tough winter. You know, what are the issues with the environmental issues and those kinds of things, just to understand better how fortified we'll have to make devices.
So if it's a freezing day and you're in the subway, you may not be able to get in because your card is frozen.
Well, the idea is we're testing to make sure that doesn't happen.
How does this technology change the way we do business, or how would it change the way we do business in this country, fast food restaurants and the like?
Well, I think the way it changes is the way I believe your other guest had a lot of great points in the article that was written. I think it changes things in lots of ways, first of which is that it makes things go faster. We've all been in a situation where we've been standing in line, for example, in a fast food restaurant that traditionally has very, very peakish types of activity. So from 11:30 to 1:30 every day, maybe as many as 40% of all the customers that come through the door that day come in that two-hour period. If for a customer, the value that's created is you don't have to wait in line as long because there's not so much money changing hands in that extra 15, 20, 30, 45 seconds doesn't actually get expended. For the business, they sell more products and services.
Sell 15 times more in some cases, I was reading.
But I would defer to your author there for the details, but we certainly see some pretty large lists.
Joanne Ramos, what do you think about that?
As far as the lift from the spending?
Yes.
Yeah, the numbers that we've seen are it tends to be a fifth higher on electronic payments, so 20% higher than it normally is.
So you envision, Joanne, during your research for this story in The Economist, you envision with this technology that essentially your phone is your lifeline, everything you need in one place, on this
exactly.
cell phone?
Exactly. And especially, again, because especially the younger generation, they are so much more likely to take their phone out with them when they leave home than money, as it is right now.
We have a caller calling in from Buffalo, New York. Susan is on the line. Susan, go ahead.
Hi. I get paid this way. My paycheck is my pay is dropped onto a Visa with ADP, and I hate it. It's just a large pain. There's a limited amount of ATMs that I can go to. I'm only allowed to get $40 if I use it on an advance. If I want cash, I have to go into the bank and fill out an advance on a credit card. It's the way it's handled. I can't. If I transfer money, it takes 2 to 3 days to transfer.
What is ADP, Susan?
Automated Data Processing, I think. Mm-hmm. It's the name of a company that holds the card.
So regardless, it's not working for you. You don't quite enjoy it.
No. I went online and asked them the closest ATM that I could use for free. Otherwise, I'd have a $3 charge. And the closest one I can go to is the Buffalo Zoo. I don't know how often you go to the zoo, but it's not working.
Not for you.
It's horrible.
Susan, thank you for your perspective. Bruce is calling from New Milford, Connecticut. Bruce, hello.
Hello. I'm absolutely opposed to all these new systems. I'll tell you why. I used to trot behind my mother when she went out dressed in her Sunday clothes to pay the bills at the gas, electric, and water company with cash. There were no checking accounts, no credit cards, no junk mail. As my mother put it before she died, she said it was a simple world. I know I read that there's 10 credit cards for every human being living in America, and the average debt is $10,000. I'm deeply in debt. My telephone cost me $150. They're going to obsolete my phone. They're going to mess it all up. My daughter told me never go on the Internet. She's on it, but you need viruses and protection. There's going to be stolen identities, it's going to be a disaster. It just complicates theft enormously.
Mark Collins, what's your response to that? Is there some fear about that in the long term?
Well, I'm certainly sensitive to the caller and the customer's concerns there, but you know, these are completely optional kinds of services, and they're available for those who are early adopters. And if it could be something that goes deeply into the product penetration in the population, or it could be a niche product, just depending on how appealing it is and how much value it brings to the customer. But it's completely a customer decision.
You think a niche market meaning the younger market, is that right?
Well, I wouldn't call the younger market a niche market. I'm just talking about how the size of any specific audience at any given point in time. You know, we've got over 200 million cell phone users in the United States now, and it's unclear at this point how many of them would adopt something like this.
Rigo is calling from Boston. Rigo, you're on the air.
Hello, Jane.
Yes, hi. Go ahead.
One thing I haven't really heard you talk about is how would someone feel if they were doing something that they wouldn't want the government to know they were doing, to specifically vices they might have. Would they want their vices electronically tracked?
Hmm. Joanne Ramos, good question. You actually say in The Economist, cash can be a cloak for wrongdoing, meaning you're not going to find a lot of drug dealers or money launderers or terrorists wanting to cash in, are you?
Well, exactly. But the flip side of that, and to the caller's point, is you know, you can track any electronic. I mean, the paper trail of an e-cash is there. The e-cash network can be traced if we allowed the government to do so, or if the government insisted that they could do so. So I think that the adoption of the cashless society is very much predicated on how the government handles this and how businesses handle this and how they handle the privacy issue. And I think one of the first or second callers talked about junk mail. I mean, if the providers of these mobile payments were to allow customer data to be sold to marketers the way that a lot of people sell customer data and marketers, grocery stores and others, I think that would really seriously crimp adoption. So in a lot of ways, it has to be handled correctly to ever become a big deal by all sides.
Mark Collins, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I guess what my point on this would be that that all of the electronic kinds of commerce that are going on today are subject to privacy and security. And all we're doing is wirelessly enabling them. There's no difference. There's no change. It's just a matter of how is the form factor and how convenient is it for the customer.
Diane is calling from Blackstone, Massachusetts with a question. Diane, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Listen, I was just wondering, how do you handle people who receive tips?
Hmm.
And I'll take.
Thank you. Joanne, you want to take that?
No, that is a good point. I mean, I suppose that would be one reason why you might keep cash around for some time. But it could be that the restaurants themselves or the places that have staff that need to be tipped start to embed that into their pay structure more. I obviously can work around if we ever got to the point where there actually was no tangible cash, which I've got to tell you is going to be a long way in the future if it ever really gets there. So,
Mark Collins,
I mean, waiters and waitresses are safe for a while.
Well, yeah, Mark Collins, what about those service workers?
Well, having been one of those service workers myself, I certainly would be concerned about their inability to be tipped, but I can't imagine that's an issue. I mean, today, with the use of other financial instruments, with credit cards as well as ATM or check cards, the tipping is made available, you know, via those kinds of methods. And I guess that's what I would like to point out to everyone is if you're charging something today, contactless or not, you'd still have the same opportunity to provide those kinds of incremental numbers.
Diane is calling with another question from Norfolk, Massachusetts. Diane, hello.
Hi, and thank you for taking the call. I wanted to ask about how I've always been concerned that there's more opportunity for people to eavesdrop on cell phones and grab credit card information. And now we're going to be using that as the vehicle for passing the credit card information, or basically the credit card information. So what kinds of security will be around this to prevent the ease of theft of that information? I'll take my answer offline.
Good, Diane. Thank you. Mark Collins from Singular Wireless. What is the answer about security?
Sure. Our security security and safety are foremost with our customers. So it's obviously something of great concern to us. I would like to point out that today you could take a contactless credit card. It's near-field communication, so you would go up to within probably 12 to 18 inches of the reader, most likely 12 or less. And you could transmit that data with a credit card today with certain credit card companies that already have embedded them into what they call smart cards. So we're not talking about changing anything in that equation. It's the same as it would be if you had an external credit card. So the security issues are the same as if you lost your wallet or you lost your wireless phone. However, in the wireless phone, we can go in and disable any of those kinds of things once the customer reports it lost or stolen. Hmm.
Lawrence, Massachusetts, is calling. Ian, hello.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just wondering if your guests thought if we do go cashless, are merchants all going to be at the mercy of MasterCard and Visa, and are rates ever going to come down for them, or are they just going to keep paying more to accept these forms of payment?
Hmm. Joanne Ramos, you want to take that?
I think that is a very good point, and I think it will be a negotiation. I mean, already as it is now, whenever a merchant accepts debit cards over credit cards, they actually pay a bit less for that transaction than credit cards. So they're trying to push customers onto debit rather than credit. If imagining a completely cashless world where their only options would be credit cards, I think it would have to be a negotiation. And then the other point is one other possible outlet that people are developing is the ability to tap with these with e-cash your bank account directly. And in that case, you would actually circumvent entirely the credit card network. So it's still shaking out. I think it's hard to answer exactly how it's going to develop.
David is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. David, hello.
I wanted to bring up the possibility of anonymous e-cash. And the reason I wanted to mention that is that there are systems that have been developed and even piloted. I believe one was piloted in Denmark over a decade ago, where the transactions are essentially you load up a smart card with your own cash in a similar way to how you would take money out of an ATM, and then you can use that cash anonymously in stores, and all the technology about using it through a cell phone or any of those other things are exactly the same as is being mooted now, except it's just that the credit card companies or even the mobile phone companies are not involved. Mm. And the main difference here is that the benefit is to the person who's the consumer. They can keep a full record of all of their transactions that they did, but those transactions only exist in the aggregate for the credit card companies. For example, you went to Dunkin' Donuts and the people know that so many people with cash came in and bought so many donuts that day, but they don't know that it was me that bought a honey dipped, and a cup of coffee.
Mark Collins?
Well, I'm not sure I fully understand what the concern is. I mean, today, if you're making a transaction with the payment of a credit card or your check card, those transactions can be logged and can be logged by both the acquirer of the activity at the point of sale as well as your financial institution. Nothing's changing in that equation.
I wanted to ask one question, Joanne, before we go to our next guest. How many people have the option now of this contactless payment system, paying for everything in our lives or most things with a cell phone or a keychain, for example?
Well, I don't really have numbers on how many people actually just don't use cash at all today. But in America, at least, there are, of the transaction volume out there last year, around 18 million transactions were done through contactless payments. And that's compared to almost a trillion using debit and credit cards. So it's still a drop in the bucket.
And Mark Collins, over what period of time do you see that increasing? Over the next year, 2 years, 5 years?
I think if we're looking at a 1 to 2 year period, probably with the accent on the second year, as the business models continue to form out. You know, they're not inconsequential hurdles to come over in terms of devices at the point of sale as well as the enablement of the devices by the wireless companies.
Hmm. I want to bring in now Douglas Mudd. He's a numismatist and curator of exhibitions at the American Numismatic Association's Money Museum in Colorado Springs. His new book is called All the Money in the World, The Art and History of Paper Money and Coins from Antiquity to the 21st Century. Douglas Mudd, it's nice to have you with us.
Hello, Jane. It's nice to be here.
You've been listening to all of this. How do you feel as a numismatist? By the way, what exactly is a numismatist?
Well, a numismatist studies the money in its different forms, including sort of its derivatives, metals and tokens, things of that sort. So any type of money from paper money to coins to even credit cards as a collectible item.
So with your background then as a numismatist, how do you feel about killing cash?
Well, I think we're going to lose something as a culture and society because cash is a tangible connection to our history.
In what way?
Well, in the sense that they have messages. You look at our paper money, you look at coins, they all have messages on them, images of famous people, images that are designed to reflect the values of our cultures. And then there's just the idea of, who's handled the money in the past. If you're talking about historical money, ancient money, or money that's a couple hundred years old, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln could have handled the money that has their images on them, things like that.
So what is our cash in this country say about us? What can you tell about our nation from our money?
Well, if you look at the messages that we have, e pluribus unum, one out of many, liberty, basic words that are intended to reflect our values as a society. Then you have the people that appear, George Washington, the founder of the country, these kinds of images that are designed to reflect our values and the strength of our country. Things like the eagle, which is a symbol of strength and power. There's all sorts of messages that are embedded in our money, not necessarily messages that people reflect on every day, but they're there.
And from your perspective then, the physical contact with money, the exchange of money, what do we lose when we lose cash?
Well, we lose a little bit of a physical connection with other people in just passing over the money, the contact, that kind of thing. You lose, in other ways, in counting money, you lose a feature there. With electronic money, you're not actually counting anything. You're not counting anything out. You don't have to handle anything other than the card itself to swipe it or to pass it over one of the new readers. So there's that physical and mental operation that goes with cash that we would lose.
And I know you also believe that money brings people together in a political sense. We've discussed before the euro in Europe and what sort of impact did that have?
Well, it crosses borders. It brings down borders because people now are trading across areas where traditionally they couldn't. It was not as easy. If you had to exchange your franc for your mark, things like that, that was a barrier to trade. By creating a single unit, they were able to increase human contact between peoples of different cultures and languages simply because they could now exchange their cash easily for goods.
So as economic ties increase, political antagonism goes away?
That's the hope. It's not always true, but it does tend to work that way. And that's where electronic money in particular is a great way to do this. That's changed the whole way that people can interact because you don't really have to work out exchange rates. That's done by the banks. But that's also losing another feature of hard cash in that you no longer need to look at it. You don't have to count it. You don't have to deal personally with people on the other end where you're working out how much something costs by using these coins that you have to interpret.
I want to take a call at the moment from Connecticut, Norwich, Connecticut. Gary is on the line. Gary, hello. What's your question?
Hi. Hi, Jane. This is Gary.
Hi, Gary.
I'm both a retailer and an adjunct professor of retailing and customer service. And I haven't heard anybody yet address the idea of the cleanliness of currency and coin. A lot of germs and the like hitch a ride on the money, and we pass it from hand to hand. I welcome your comments on that.
Gary, thank you. I hate to ask a numismatist about this, but is that a downside, Douglas Mudd?
It's definitely a downside, and it has at times been a major issue in the United States, for example. During the early 20th century, we issued a new series of gold coins that had, for their design, instead of a raised design, they had an incused design, so the design was actually cut into the coin. These are the famous eagles. Now, one of the major issues that was aired in the newspapers at the time was, well, with these incused designs, they'll increase the chance that these coins will harbor germs and accumulate more germs than regular coins would. And there was a battle that went on for a while about that. So it's an issue that's been out there for a very long time, and it's certainly a downside with money.
Would you broaden this out for us, Douglas Mudd, from a worldwide perspective? How do you see this evolving our culture from culture to culture? What's the biggest downside, would you say, of a cashless world?
Of a cashless world? Well, there's the loss of the historical perspective. You lose another way in which to transmit a culture's values, the history. Most nations of the world use their money to transmit messages about themselves. So we lose that extra message. Now, there's an open question on whether people actually look and pay attention to their money, but there's that problem. Now, as far as whether or not we'll go to a cashless society, the reality is, as Joanne points out in her articles, that there's still a basic need for your small change for very small transactions, the $10 note that's given to your granddaughter or other things in a card, plus the anonymity of these coins and paper money are a huge advantage to some people.
Let me ask Joanne Ramos about that. Joanne, is that one of the issues concerning you?
The loss of these small...
Yes, I want to pay for a pack of gum, or I guess you can pay just as easily with your cell phone or your technologically...
Well, that's where it's moving now. I mean, the kind of contactless payment cards that Visa and MasterCard and others have put out recently explicitly target and, in fact, only work for transactions under $25. So that's already being kind of attacked, if you will, by the big companies. And then even if you wanted to send your granddaughter $10, you can now buy a Gap gift card or even one of those kind of more broader gift cards can be used anywhere for $10. So I think, I think technologically, whether we're there in 5 or 10 or 15 years, we're going to get there. But it's a matter of, as a society, are we comfortable with security? Are we comfortable with the privacy issues? Are we comfortable that the companies that are pushing this, for some very good reasons, are going to handle it correctly in terms of fees and what they charge for various transactions? Because if you think about it right now, when you use cash, you may pay an ATM fee to take out your $100 or more. But every time you use those dollar bills, you don't pay again. When it's an electronic world, every time you use, you make a transaction, you're paying a little bit. And if not you, the merchant is. So there's more money to be made in that, obviously, for companies. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but it has to be handled correctly.
Newport News, Virginia. Deborah is calling. Deborah, hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a comment to offer, and then I'd like to listen to what responses might come. Your numismatist used the word value, and it made me think about what money is to us in the first place, which is a way of placing value on the things that we have, the products that we produce. And the vast majority of us are no longer working at producing anything. We're in service jobs. So taking away any tangible aspect of what we possess and what we own, it seems to me taking us one further step away from having any sense that what we do every day has a value to it. You know, like I could take my chicken and the eggs it produces and barter it for the fabric that you weave, and that's, you know, how people did business 200 years ago, but we're so far from that now. I'd just like to hear the comments of your guests about that concept. Thanks.
Thank you, Deborah. Joanne, Mark, Douglas, anybody want to jump in?
Yeah, that's a good point. It does take us one step further away from the idea of having a tangible item, an object that represents value. But we've been moving in that direction for the last 100 years anyway, from, you know, a gold coin being the standard where, you know, it's worth $10 because it's got approximately $10 worth of gold in it, to today where our paper money, essentially the only reason why it has any value is because the government says it does and will accept it for $10 or whatever the denomination is. With electronic money, you have a further step away from that, but it doesn't change the basis of how we value things. We've always, since the invention of money, assigned a value to pretty much any object that you could trade.
Tom is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Tom, hello to you.
Hello. I had an acquaintance who had to go down to New Orleans to try to rescue his aunt, and the whole time before he even hit, I think, Mississippi, was pull out cash, pure cash society. And you have other events of people living in rural areas with bad cell phone or what have you. How can, if the tenure of the conversation is do away with cash in 15 years completely, what's going to happen in those situations?
Good question, Tom. Thank you. Mark Collins from Singular Wireless. What do you do during disaster times?
Well, I think anytime disasters take place and anytime society has a need for those kinds of things, I think one of your commenters said earlier, I don't see cash going away anytime soon. Possibly it's just a diminished role over time, but I don't see cash going away anytime soon. And you have to have a cash society for just all the reasons that the caller mentioned.
Joe is calling from North Weymouth, Massachusetts. Hello, Joe.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for taking my call. I just heard somebody use the term lost money. I lost some money in an identity theft. 4 years after I went to Europe, I got a charge for some email stuff and for some Internet software originating in Romania. Fortunately, I reported it. It wasn't charged. The bank reimbursed my funds and everything else. But I wonder about the kinds of things. I'm a senior citizen. I spent 40 years in information technology, and I'm amazed. Today I learned some new language. It was called contactless payments. I always call them charge cards. But the fear that people have is the fear in the language, which is changing every day. What are you dealing with? Secondly, there's the fear of increased costs. You happen to have Mark from Singular. I just got my charge card, my bill from Singular, and I found a new charge on there that has to do with the infrastructure of building wireless interface and changing my car phone to a wireless
phone. So you're concerned about the fees, Joe. Good question, Mark Collins. Let's turn that back to you. Fees, more fees with this sort of contactless payment system. True?
There very well could be. I mean, it's too early to say at this point. But I just want to point out for the caller and for the listeners, this is a very competitive marketplace. There are ultimately hundreds of financial instruments that customers can choose from, as well as numerous sets of wireless carriers that customers can choose from. So a competitive market will take effect, and prices will be lowered relative to the value that's created.
Joanne Ramos, last question for you. The average American household has more than 10 credit cards. Will this be an easy trade-in, do you think?
I think that if it's convenient and if the fees are managed and if all those other sort of risks I point out, if this is secure, I think it could work. And again, as I think it was Mark who pointed out, the contactless cards at least are basically credit and debit cards. It's just that you don't have to punch in, you know, number or sign your name. So it's moving what you're doing already today into a different format and just sort of an easier and more convenient one for you to use.
Joanne Ramos joining us from New York City, global banking correspondent at The Economist magazine, co-author of this week's cover story, The End of the Cash Era. Thank you to you, Joanne.
Thank you.
Mark Collins, Vice President of Long-Term Business Planning at Singular Wireless. Mark, thanks to you from Atlanta today.
Thanks for hosting me.
And Douglas Mudd joining us from Colorado Springs, a numismatist, curator of exhibitions at the American Numismatic Association's Money Museum in Colorado Springs. Doug, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Jane.
I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.